Hello and welcome to the Bot Nirvana podcast, where we dive into all things software automation. I'm your host, Nandan Mullakra. While I'm not podcasting, I write articles on nandan.info. I hope you enjoy the show. Let's get right into it. Our guest today is Sean Dawson. Sean has been involved with RPA since the early days. He co-founded Virtual Operations, one of the earliest companies in the space, and has since been involved in various roles. He currently heads the consulting delivery for UiPath. In this chat, we talk about the challenges he sees in the space and solutions for the same. We talk about IT systems versus automation, opportunity identification, messaging, and more. Let's listen in. Hi, Sean. Welcome to the Bot Nirvana podcast. It's awesome having you today. Can we start with a quick personal intro?
I would be happy to. I feel like I'm a grizzled old veteran in the space. I started way back in 2012. I had started a company called Virtual Operations, and we were one of the very first partners for Blue Prism. And we were Blue Prism's first partner in the Western Hemisphere. We were one of UiPath's very first partners ever. And from there, that company got acquired by Cognizant, and from there I helped build the Cognizant automation practice from scratch to where it is today. And that was a very exciting opportunity. I have done some other things. I now work for UiPath Professional Services as I'm in charge of consulting delivery. So that includes any of our consulting programs or our services, as well as we have what's called the STAR program, which stands for JIC. Advisory resident, and where we pair client personnel up with experienced practitioners in the automation space to help them leapfrog over the kinds of problems that they encounter as they build and scale their automation programs.
Wow, that's exciting. Firstly, I didn't know that you were with Virtual Operations, so that's awesome. And yeah, congrats on that. So that's good. I mean, because Virtual Operations, where I used to go and read a lot of comments and information, and I think it's still available.
That's great. I'm sure that I was involved in some of that creation. I helped build some training programs and a bunch of stuff over there. We were scrambling back then. It was, RPA was just this tiny, tiny, tiny little space, and we were trying to figure out how to make our way. I could never have imagined that it would have blown up the way that it has. And yeah. It was very exciting, very, very fortunate to be in at the ground floor of that. And it's very exciting to see how much it's grown and how it's evolved.
Yeah. And, you know, yeah, starting out early for me too, it was very difficult to find some people doing, you know, find proper documents, right? And that's where I used to go for Virtual Operations or Symfony. Those are two places I used to find fairly good documents, you know, other than the marketing hype and marketing things.
There was not a lot of content that wasn't marketing hype. That's for sure. And there were a lot of people going around. You know, it was very difficult to tell the difference between the people who knew what they were doing and the people who were just talking about as if they knew what they're doing. It was tough to find good info back then. I don't know. Maybe we still have the problem today.
We still have this problem, and that's why we have this community, you know, to protect and develop more documents and more knowledge that we can share among ourselves. Okay, you did mention about the STAR program, and that sounds very interesting. And so, can you tell us a bit more about that STAR program?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. I love this program. The problem that we're trying to face is that our clients are very, very often bumping up against the just very barriers to growth or scale or getting what they need out of their automation program. And it happens at various phases throughout the automation program. Sometimes it happens very early. They struggle to even get their first automation into production. Or sometimes it happens a little bit later. You know, they're 2 years into their program and the business is now starting to scrutinize the benefits of all of the automations in aggregate. And they want to see dashboards about how much value we're getting out of our automation program versus how much it costs and those sorts of things. And the program just wasn't set up for that. What we've done with UiPath Professional Services is developed this program, which is essentially a support program where we pair client personnel up with a team of experienced practitioners who have built and run large scale automation programs before. And those people are also plugged into an ecosystem of best practices, and they provide delivery, execution, and oversight for the client personnel. Basically, you know, we come in and we want to make the COE leader a total hero within the business. And obviously, we also try to get as much visibility into the program as we can, so that we can help them also see around corners and avoid a lot of the gotchas that happen through the process of building and scaling the program. So, I mean, you know, the bottom line is, no matter how many times you've kind of done technical projects and built certain things, we're doing something novel here, this kind of automation. And I've got some, you know, some ways of thinking about that illustrate that. But anytime you do something novel, novelty invites error. And so what we can do is get the customer personnel plugged into a team that has already learned from a lot of the potential mistakes that stand in the way of succeeding, right? And so, you know, we've already pre-made all the mistakes that our clients are likely to make, and so we can help them avoid that.
Yeah. So people don't need to reinvent the wheel, right? And so
precisely, yeah. Or yeah,
the past.
Yeah. Yeah, and more importantly, you won't use the kind of wheel that you might use for an IT transformation project, for an automation project, when it's not going to be a perfect fit, or there's some serious, there's some considerations that you want to, that you really want to take into account. I like to draw this distinction between what I call IT transformation and RPA, or hyper automation. So hyper automation is the term that we use to talk about RPA and the surrounding technologies that kind of keep it enabled, right?
Right.
And the way that I like to think about it is, imagine that you have a box, and an empty box, and that empty box represents everything your business has to do in order to create value for the world. Within that box, there's a smaller box which represents the subset of that bigger box that could theoretically be automated with today's technology, right? And so the job of the IT organization is to fill that smaller box, right? You're just to try and get as much automation out of the business as possible with today's technology. But typically what they have to do it with is giant rocks. And so they place these rocks very carefully in the box, and they organize them perfectly, and they make sure that they're attached exactly the right way, and they pile them in the box as tightly as they possibly can. But because of the nature of things, the rocks, there's space between the rocks, and that's where we come in. We come in as the RPA folks, hyper automation folks, whatever you want to call it. We come in to fill those gaps, but we're not filling them with rocks. We're filling it with sand. And so if you think about that metaphor, what you realize is that you pour sand differently than you would if you were placing rocks. And just as you pour sand differently, then that you need to approach automation in a different way than you would approach IT transformation. Otherwise, you're just kind of doing more of the same thing that got you into the place that you are today. The tools are only part of the problem. Or only part of the solution. The rest of the solution is a different mindset in the way of doing things. And so, and that can really help inform how, you know, so for example, one of the big mistakes that I see a lot of customers making is, you know, they get started in their automation program, and the very first thing they do, which is a good thing to do, is go out and find all the opportunity, or, you know, some opportunity for automation, right? So you go out and you do an opportunity identification exercise where you create a process catalog, and oh, here's, you know, 30 opportunities that we can go build. Well, the first thing any business person wants to do with that spreadsheet that you give them when they get done with that exercise is they sort by the benefit, and then they take the top one and they say, hey, give me that one, give me this huge benefit one. Well, almost by definition, that top opportunity is going to be one of your most complex opportunities. And if you go with that one straight out the gate before your muscles are strong enough to be able to actually, you know, execute on those kinds of projects, you're going to end up spending 9 months on this automation project, and it's not, their benefits are going to erode, and everyone's going to get all antsy about it, and it's going to be bad. You're much better off choosing as your first one, two, or three projects very, very simple projects that still have positive ROI. And, you know, so for example, so that's one example of the types of things that we have customers who, you know, they make those mistakes all the time. I go into rooms all the time where I have this discussion with clients and I tell them that story and I get nodding all over the room. Like, yeah, that's exactly what we did. And, you know, we realize, and sometimes clients don't survive. The automation yeah. programs just don't survive. They decide, oh, this is a waste of time. We haven't gotten anywhere and it's been 9 months. And so right. one of the tenets that I like to say is, if you can't get it to production in 4 to 6 weeks, once you're in the steady state, I mean, your initial couple projects might take longer than that because you've got to get machines provisioned and all that stuff. But once you're in the steady state, if you're not being able to deliver something to production in you know, something like 4 to 6 weeks, a short period of time, then you're not doing it right. The chunks that you're taking off are too big and you need to shrink them down.
Right. And it's interesting that you point out two boxes, you know, what's the IT transformation box and an automation box. And it's interesting that the bigger box is the IT transformation box, and it still is. I mean, you know, there's the implementation.
No question.
Yeah, yeah, it's implementing an ERP or a CRM or any of yep. this, even SaaS products out there. So you've been doing this for many customers. And so what are the big challenges that you see with these customers right now?
You know, the biggest challenges I see with clients is tuning their automation program properly. And the biggest, everybody focuses on development. And that's what we all know how to do, right? We all know how to code. And okay, fine, you have to learn how to code on the UiPath platform. All right, well, yeah, I mean, you know, you've got to go through the training and do that. But everyone's very focused on that. And what, oh, are we going to use an agile methodology or a waterfall methodology and all of that? Those things are very important. We can't give them short shrift, but they're not the only thing. We also have to have enough opportunity to feed that development pipeline. You need an opportunity identification funnel. Right. That feeds your development pipeline, and they have to be tuned. You don't want to produce too much opportunity, because if you produce too much opportunity, then you're wasting, you're not only wasting effort on your pipeline, but you're also kind of irritating the business, because in their mind, they're throwing stuff over the wall and coming up with these great automation ideas, and they're just going into a black hole. And you can't afford for that to happen. So it has to be very well tuned. You don't want any more opportunities coming out of your opportunity funnel than you can actually build. In fact, one of the rules of thumb that I like to use is, don't go finding more opportunity than you can build in 6 months. Right. Because by the time 6 months has passed, any individual opportunity that's older than 6 months old is stale, and you're going to have to go talk to the stakeholders again and recreate it. That's just the way that works. Sorry. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, don't go into your business and boil the ocean and find, you know, 18 years worth of opportunity, unless that's what you have to do in order to justify the cost of, you know, the program. But just understand that anything past 6 months there is a waste. And ideally, you're not just going into the business. So there's two different ways that you can identify automation opportunities within a business. There's the top-down way and there's the bottom-up way. And, you know, the bottom line is, you need people who understand simultaneously enough about the business processes and enough about automation to be able to recommend automation opportunities, right? That's just right. obvious. Now, so you have two ways to go about doing that. You can take business analysts who understand automation and teach them enough about the business processes to be able to nominate opportunities. That's the top-down way. I'm going to take business analysts, and I'm going to embed them in the business and have them talk to SMEs and create opportunities, put them into Automation Hub if you're using the UiPath platform. The other way to do it is the bottom-up way. You can teach the subject matter experts enough about automation so that they can nominate their own opportunities in automation. And that's the bottom up way. So which way is the right way to do it? The answer is both. There are trade-offs to both ways. Now, the nice thing about a top-down automation pipeline methodology is that the opportunities that come out of that effort are usually of very high quality, and they're usually kind of ready to go, and there's not a whole lot of massaging to do, and there's not a whole lot of design to do. These people kind of get the program, and they've done this a lot, and you can get, in a short period of time, you can get some really good opportunities. The downside of it is it's expensive, and you can only do it like one, two, or three times before you've kind of exhausted all the low-hanging fruit and you're done. You can't really, you get to the point of diminishing returns after that. Right. So, okay, fine. That gets you 9 months into your program. But after that, you're dry. And we see clients, that happens to them. They get dry and, they're not able to find opportunities at scale anymore. So what you really want to do is at the same time that you're doing that top-down opportunity identification process, you're building your bottoms-up opportunity identification process too. Now, what does that take? Well, what we end up doing is taking people from the business and teaching them about automation, eliminating, and that helps eliminate the fear, uncertainty, and doubt about the robot apocalypse coming to steal everybody's jobs, right? And they kind of get it. Oh, I see what automation's all about. And they kind of get excited about it. Then we put them through about a half day workshop to understand what automation is and isn't about. We teach them how to nominate opportunities. It's very, very, very important to have a really robust opportunity identification system so that anybody in the company, if they come up with an automation idea, can just go into the system and put it in there. So at UiPath, part of the platform is we have Automation Hub. You can use it for automation ideas or process excellence pipelines, anything you want. But it's very, very important that anyone in the business can just go to a web page and start typing stuff in. Tremendously important. But we teach them how to do that, and then we give them homework. We say, hey, everybody, go home, come back within 2 days and put two ideas into the pipeline. And what you find is a lot of the ideas that you get from that process aren't very good because people don't really get what automation is. But you cultivate them, and they feel involved, and you're getting the juices flowing, and pretty soon, What you can get is you're cultivating what I call an automation mindset within the business. And what I mean by that is just as if you or I were driving down the road and we looked out the side of the car window and we saw humans picking cotton, it would blow our minds because why would someone be standing out in 110 degree heat in the Texas summertime picking cotton in this day and age? We have machines that do that. Well, the same is kind of true if you or I are walking through a cubicle farm and we see people copying and pasting data from one application to another. We're like, man, we've got machines for that. Like, how are people not doing that? I want to cultivate that automation mindset, that sort of disgust at doing things that machines can do more efficiently and better and with higher quality. I want to cultivate that in the entire business. And that's how you end up with a really, really healthy automation pipeline process. Now, once you have that, you better be able to build the automations that come out of the bottom of that pipe, within 6 months. Otherwise, they start to get stale and then people stop nominating things because, boy, it just doesn't ever seem to go anywhere. And you got to make sure that you're doing all the right practices there to keep everybody interested and to do meaningful things and all of that, right? And then the last component is operations. Obviously, once I build the automations, I need to be able to run them in production. I need to be able to monitor that they're actually working. I need to be able to report on the benefit that they're actually producing. And I need to be able to roll that into dashboards so that I can show executive leadership so I can prove to them, hey, this is where all your money is being spent. And this is how it's coming out to help the business. And as soon as, and when you have that, when it runs like a sewing machine, it's just beautiful.
Yeah, true. And we are moving to that stage where we are moving away from manual cotton picking to more of doing things automatically within our digital space, right? So if you compare that manual picking as the time when we are doing computerization, which is basically having the computers for people and just like growing the cotton. And yes. Then right now, what we are doing is to moving to the next phase, which is computerization of the computer itself, if you will, which is basically automating the computer itself. So, you know, earlier we were having manual work at the computers. Now we are actually having the computer do the computer, do the work itself, right?
Yeah.
And so that's a new mindset shift. Which needs new ways to do things. So during computerization, all we did was go do a big requirement study, and I've been part of it, right? And, you know, get the big requirements. We spoke about SAP and ERP earlier. And, you know, you come and implement the ERP or you customize the ERP. Here, we are talking about a complete shift, a mindset shift where the technology is part of the business, and even business people have to be involved in coming up with these opportunities to automate and probably even work on this automation as part of the citizen development program, right?
Yep.
And so, you know, we are seeing a shift from how we were doing IT earlier, probably to a way we are going to do IT in future, right? Yeah. What do you think of that?
I think that I don't think it's so much of a shift from one thing to another thing. I think that the IT way of doing things will continue. You are still going to have large-scale SAP implementations that take 3 years to come and cost millions and millions of dollars. That will not change.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what will change, or what the promise of our automation programs are, is, you know, we're the sand that fills in those rocks, right? And so I'm gonna go back to my rocks and sand metaphor there. The other thing that happens with that inner box that you're filling with the rocks and with the sand is that box grows over time.
Mm-hmm.
And it grows for two reasons. It grows because, number one, the outer box is growing. The stuff that our business has to do in order to create value for the world. We have to do more stuff. That's just the way it works. And so the inner box, which is, you know, just a proportion of the outer box, grows proportionally, right? The other reason that the inner box grows is that new technologies come online all the time.
Right.
And so those capabilities, the inner box expands because there's more capabilities that come. So the sand in our case, our automation can be used to fill the gaps between, you know, as the box grows as well. Now, I think where I see it going,
mm-hmm.
is that eventually the RPA and hyperautomation and these platforms, these low code, no code tools, all of this stuff are going to be used as a way to prove out the solutions before we have to bite the bullet and build them into the SAP system. The SAP systems are getting more and more complicated and more expensive, and we have more and more technical debt in them, and they, you know, we have regression problems and all of that. But if we're building bots to do the stuff that we haven't figured out how to make SAP do yet, then this is a good way to test out, well, in our next version of SAP, when we upgrade to SAP Glorious, then, you know, here, why don't we work on trying to implement the stuff in SAP that we had to write bots for?
Mm-hmm.
And so our RPA hyper automation program becomes our roadmap for what we eventually want our IT systems to do. And the nice thing about that is we know what the ROI and the business value of these projects are, because we've already done them. We know what we've already been getting the business benefit of that automation because it was a profitable it has a positive ROI in the first place. And now we know, for the cost of X, we can now not have to maintain that bot anymore, and what frees up a bot license, and there's a cost associated with that. And so it brings that amorphous thing where the IT organization isn't really held to an ROI standard.
Right.
Well, that's because they really can't be. It's too amorphous today. But in this kind of new world where you're using your hyper automation program as as your roadmap to your IT transformation process, you can get a lot closer to that. And okay. I think that's where they go. IT is not going away, obviously. And I've had customers, you know, say, oh, we should be doing everything with bots. No, you shouldn't. You're still going to want IT systems, right? You would not want your IT systems to be, you know, the Microsoft platform plus a bunch of bots, right? I mean, you know, like Word and Excel and SharePoint and bots, right? That would be horrible. So you're always going to have IT systems, but I think what's going to happen is where it's going to become a lot more obvious how to work together to turn all that sand into rocks.
Right. And I think in that sense, to your analogy of rocks and sand, maybe the IT systems are the rocks, and that means they are the big things. And
yeah,
the automation
exactly right.
is the glue, the sand that holds them
yep.
together, and also is driving these bigger initiatives. And yeah, so, you know, I think that makes a lot of sense. So from, and you know, looking at this hyper automation, you spoke about value a lot. So when looking at this hyper automation initiatives, you know, how do you see this value being tracked and being measured continuously?
Yeah, that's a really, really important question. And it's becoming more and more important. I've seen a lot of clients where they've been given a pass by the business because, you know, we trust that automation is creating value, but they don't know how much value, and they haven't really been doing a very disciplined and robust job of reporting on the actual value. It's really, really important that from day one, you insist. Like on an opportunity by opportunity basis, you need to have an ROI for each bot, and you need to understand what the costs are going to be, and you need to understand what the benefits are going to be and how you're going to measure them. And so the way that I recommend doing that is, first of all, nothing gets into the opportunity management system. So I'm just going to, the one that we use is called Automation Hub. Nothing gets into Automation Hub without at least a t-shirt size of how hard we think it's going to be and without a benefit number attached to it. And then as we marshal the automation opportunity through the life cycle, those numbers get tightened down. And at the output of the design stage, so we have a process definition document, right? Within that process definition document, we should have a really, really good idea. In fact, that's what the process definition document is. Is it's kind of an agreement between the technical people and the business people, where they're saying that the technical person is saying, or the business person is saying, hey, if you built me a bot that did this thing in this document, then it would deliver me this much value. And the technical person is saying, I can build you a bot. I believe I can build you a bot that does this. For this, and it'll cost X. And so you have both of those numbers at that point. We should have them pretty well nailed down. There are projects that fail after the process definition stage. We have to be comfortable with that. But, you know, by that time, we should have it pretty well nailed down. And so it's within Automation Hub, it's locked down on opportunity by opportunity basis. So when the output of all of that is that process definition document. And within that document, we have to have, here's how we're going to measure the value. And so there's a bunch of different ways to do it. One way to do it is to say, on a per transaction basis, each transaction that this bot successfully works saves me $2. Okay, great. And then so we just take the number of transactions and multiply by $2, we throw that onto a dashboard. That's defined in the process definition document. Okay. There are other types of bots that reduce risk. And so, you know, each bot that runs eliminates the potential for getting penalties. And so I'm going to measure the number of penalties that we get, the number of tax penalties that we get on a quarterly by quarterly basis. And I want to see that number go down because of this bot, right? And those sorts of things. But we have to define within the process definition document how we're going to measure the benefit. And then that obviously has to be implemented. Now, there's a couple of different patterns that you're going to end up using. And then there are things like on a per transaction basis or cost avoidance or you know, benefit to the business. Oh, we're going to increase sales and those sorts of things. You know, you get a pretty easy sense of how you can do that. And the important thing is to have the discipline to make sure that part of your implementation process is to have those data, you know, where on an opportunity by opportunity basis, you're reporting on the benefit. And then obviously you're rolling that up for your executive leadership.
All right, which is cool. So one of the things I have many people come to me with is that, you know, I have many of these opportunities, but they don't provide enough benefits compared to, or do not add up when you consider the costs associated, yep, especially with the development and the support, you know, or the, yep, long-term support. So, yep, how do you justify such initiatives?
Yeah, I'll make it even worse for you. There's a trap that a lot of people get into, a lot of organizations, and I call it the modularity trap. What happens is, when you first start your opportunity, when you first start your automation program, you do that top down opportunity identification exercise, and you get a bunch of pretty good opportunities. They're pretty simple and they yield a lot of value. And that's the low hanging fruit, right? You know, there's this nice, big, giant grapefruits, you know, hanging on the tree, and you're like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. Now, there's two problems with that.
Yeah.
The first problem is that teaches the business that everything's a giant grapefruit. Oh, yeah, we're going to get huge benefit. Like, everything you do is going to be this giant grapefruit. Oh, this is wonderful. That's not true. That's not true at all. So, you know, rules of thumb come to our rescue here. The average automation opportunity has a benefit number on somewhere on the $40,000 to $60,000 range. That's the average opportunity. Now, the first couple opportunities you find when you're just starting your program, or you're just rolling into a new line of business, right? You know, it's the same sort of answer, are going to be much, much bigger than that. Like maybe an order of magnitude bigger. And so it's $500,000 of benefit. Well, yeah, I mean, we have opportunities. I mean, if you went to UiPath Forward a couple of weeks ago, you know, they trotted folks on stage where you know, they had three bots executing and they were saving the company $40 million. Well, that's wonderful. I mean, that's a wonderful story. Everyone should know about it. That's great. I'm glad we're talking about it, but it's not typical.
Exactly.
And you can't fall into the trap of thinking that it is. So what happens is you need to use those big grapefruits as your way of building. And by the way, those big grapefruits, to implement those, the average cost of building those things run into the $60,000, $70,000, $80,000, $100,000 range. You need to make sure that the first couple $100,000 of automations you build, you're building enough capability and enough reusable components and modularity such that the next ones you build cost half of that. Until, if you're not getting your cost per automation down from $80,000 to $20,000, then you're going to run into that situation that you're describing where you run out of opportunity because your average automation opportunity is only 40 to 60K. And right. So if your implementation isn't low enough, you're screwed. And so you have to make sure. And again, this is the kind of thing that it's real easy to make this mistake on the front end. You don't even realize, oh, I really better make sure that I'm driving proper modularity in my implementations, and that I'm, you know, if I have to log into SAP, I only write that code once, and every robot I build leverages that logging into SAP script in a modular way, and then I use test-driven development and I'm testing it automatically and all of that stuff. Because if I don't do that, or if I do an amazing job of that, I can get my cost per automation down to the 10 to 20K range. And that's the only way to address the long tail of opportunity.
Yeah. And I think you mentioned a few things there that reminds me of the whole messaging that I think we got wrong, especially, you know, going into AI and RPA. You know, first thing, we've sent out a message that the bots will come and automate everything. And so, you know, people started getting scared of it. The media started carrying stories of how all the jobs are going to go away. That's one thing. And second thing, then also as part of that is that we went after the bigger opportunities, like the grapefruits they're talking about. And then, yeah, you know, we set an expectation that, you know, the automation can deliver huge ROI, like you were talking about, you know, what was presented at Forward. So at the end of the day, what is happening is that the messaging is coming back to bite, right? So it's something, yeah. I think we need to tone down this hype, and which is good that we're going to, and then find ways to present these benefits in a right way, as well as start with the right opportunities. Like you earlier mentioned, don't go for the biggest complex opportunity, go for the somewhere in between or a simpler opportunity, and then keep building from there. So I think, I mean, this has been a learning phase. I was talking to Ian Barkin the other day, and we were talking about like a first innings in cricket and a second innings in cricket. So we only have two innings in cricket. So, you know, we are into the second innings in automation. So I think, you know, here is a time for us to get the messaging right, that, you know, now that we have understood what automation AI is, it's not magic. It's not everything. It has got its own pros and cons, but there is a way to do it right. So, but what I'm saying is that, you know, setting that expectation, I think is that setting that expectation of messaging is something we should do in this space.
Yeah. The story that I like to tell about how to do that, uh-huh, is it's actually a cricket analogy.
Oh, cool.
Now, I don't know that much about cricket. I love it. I think it's a great sport. I think it's great. But one of the greatest people to ever play the game of cricket is an Australian named Donald Bradman.
Bradman, yeah.
Yeah, which of course you've heard of him. Everybody knows cricket's heard of him.
He's the god of cricket, yeah.
He's the god of cricket. Well, why is he the god of cricket? Well, he's the god of cricket because what he did, and he was the absolute master of this, such that they had to make rules in the game, I understand, in order to like prevent him from being like people who do his sort of thing to be that successful, is he just hit the ball on the ground. And that's the key. I wrote a blog entry on the UiPath blog about this, and it's that's what you need to think about. So there's no, again, the average automation, the average benefit of one of these automations is somewhere on the order of $40,000 to $60,000. Well, I got news for you. One or two or even three automations isn't gonna move the needle very much.
Right.
I need hundreds. I need a machine that is capable of pumping out automations every 4 weeks and just dumping them out there and producing value, and it's just cranking. You need to be operating at that scale.
And then I think it's, if you look deep down within this organization that's doing it right, they've done that mindset shift, you know, to understand that automation is a longer term game where small benefits that I see is good. And then I need to keep developing on it, whether it is an IDP program, whether it is an RPA program, or there's an AI program. It takes time. It takes time for us to get. We probably will not get to a self-driving autonomous enterprise like many people want us to believe, or a self-driving car like a self-driving, but we will get good benefits, and, you know, let us reap those benefits, and, you know, hit the runs, hit the singles.
Yeah. It's like the fable of the tortoise and the hare. We're the tortoise, and we're just plugging away, and we're just, you know, we're just cranking away, you know, day in and day out and day in and day out, and accreting value. And if you stay focused on that, and if you stay focused on what can I get to production tomorrow? Okay, nothing tomorrow. All right, what about a week from now? What about 2 weeks from now? Let's go. What can I get out there? And then making sure that everything I put out there has positive ROI, pretty soon you're going to look around and go, it's like compounding interest. You look around and go, wow, we've got a lot of benefit here.
Yeah.
And that's the key.
So run fast, sprint, but know that it's a marathon, right? And keep at it, right? So I think that's a great place to end this podcast on. So Sean, thank you for your spending time today. Great thoughts and insights there. So if people need to find and connect with you, what's the best way?
Yeah, best way. So I'm on LinkedIn, obviously. Sean Dawson, SHAUNDAWSON. You can find me on LinkedIn. Also, sean.dawson@uipath.com is my email address. And I'm happy to answer questions, happy to talk. Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to come here and talk. It's been a real pleasurable experience for me. And I really appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you, Sean. Thanks for all the great thoughts. Thank you.
Thank you for joining the Bot Nirvana podcast. Appreciate if you can leave a review on iTunes or Stitcher. Catch the show notes on botnirvana.org. While you're there, feel free to explore more automation ideas, tutorials, tools, and more. See you next time.